Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
We'll be right back.
less than 24 hours away from the start of the reconvening of the Liars Club as executives from all around the NFL gathered at Kansas City, Missouri for the NFL draft. Welcome to Salty Radio on the Raw. I'm your host, Michael Wilson, and as always, it is good to have you in the house. Salty Radio on the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athletes Sports Network. Get all the good shit, the who, what, when, where, why, and how, right now at www.BASNNewsroom.com. All one phrase. Shout out to members of the Brother Man Network as we are putting this abbreviated show together for you for tomorrow. And among them, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. What up, G?
Mr. Manford got to come to my house and we got to have a powwow.
As that, and what shall the powwow be about?
Because of what they did to Oakland A's. This is not acceptable. What Manfred said this week is not acceptable.
He said
that I feel for the A's fans, but he said nothing about what Major Baseball would have done. See, that's not right.
Don't you think it's pretty much a dead issue, though, because they're not going to bring baseball back. And I don't think they've got any kind of plan that includes Oakland in the mix. So,
what I heard today is they're talking about Fremont again.
Really?
Fremont expansion to Fremont.
Uh-huh.
But see, this is not fair to Seattle. It's not fair to Nashville. You can't do that.
Well, we gotta give that the back shelf for the time being because
tonight on this
show, we gotta talk about the draft. And when I think about this draft coming up, I think about the draft of 1999. If you remember, the brothers were getting some love. As a matter of fact, the fans in New York City, because at the time, the draft was still being held in New York, was held in the Phillips Forum, and there was a aura of expectation as black quarterbacks were getting some love. Akili Smith, Dante Culpepper, Donovan McNabb, Sean King. I believe there were five brothers that were picked in the first round of the 99 draft. I think six altogether. And out of all of them, unfortunately, McNabb is the only one who managed to eke out a career and we can honestly say belongs in the Hall of Fame. Now, we've got four or five brothers who will probably go ahead for a decent payday and they'll get their bonus money, but there's always one guy that somehow kind of gets into the ointment, works their way in, and somebody says, what about this guy? And we have a feeling this draft has that same element in one Levis from Kentucky.
Hey, I had a couple of days of the draft number. Yeah, that right here.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. I really would like to know what all of a sudden makes somebody decide that player A is better than player B if they're both on equal footing and they both have nothing else to show other than statistics, analytics, and all the other crap that they want to present to us.
It's called presentation, man.
Yep.
And with ESPN presenting it, you know what's going to happen. Look, that guy from Kentucky was either third, fourth, or fifth.
Mm-hmm.
Now everybody number one, get out of here. You mean the guy from Ohio State drops? The guy from, but the other three that quarterbacks drop because this guy goes up, get out of here.
Yeah. If we're talking the attributes of the so-called prototype, the one that they put out early on, who was supposed to be the consensus number one pick, was Bryce Young from Alabama. He's 5'10".
Right.
I think he would have the same issues, the same challenges that, say, General Wilson had when he was coming out. Now, there are four or five others, and they range from 6'3", 6'4", to Young at 5'10". There are reasons why they say they like Young at 5'10", but we've seen the wool pulled out from underneath the first round pick before.
Yep.
That's not an excellent guy because by rule, unspoken rule, 3 years is normally the time that a prospect becomes a player.
But Michael, we knew that 2 years ago we weren't going to do anything because he gets here on the field.
Yeah, we know. But 3 years, Gary Gray, if he's drafted by the Oakland Raiders, is going to be a player. They take Gary and they say, Gary, here's your playbook. Learn it. So you got your playbook. You got a year to get that straight now. Second year, it's Gary. These are your teammates. the starters on offense and defense, and here's some other guys who you see have integral roles. I want you to get to know. So by the third year, if I'm on the coaching board and I'm looking at the depth chart, Gary Gray is lined up with the D-backs, and I'm saying, okay, who is our safety? And I say, McCray and Gray. So sure enough, by the third year, Gary Gray has got it down. I'm going to put him in at free safety, and he's going to play. It's as simple as that, or at least it should be.
Moving on. Okay. All right. The classic example is what happened in San Francisco. San Francisco, yep. Trey Young, right?
Yep.
Trey Young waits 2 years to start, which is the normal progression of most rookie quarterbacks.
Right.
Trey Young starts his third year.
You mean Bryce Young?
Right, yeah, Bryce Young. No, Trey Young, San Francisco.
You mean Trey Lance?
Trey Lance, yeah, I get my name, Trey Lance.
Yeah, okay.
All right, Trey Lance gets drafted, right? Trey Lance goes 2 years watching what needs to be done. Trey Lance gets put in the starting position. He gets injured, right?
Yeah.
Now, Trey Lance has played the full season. Trey has played the full season.
Yeah.
You were picked up something he needed to know.
Yeah, that's true. But you got to remember something.
Birdie comes in game 3 or game 4. Birdie comes in.
Right.
Birdie wins 7 games in a row. Now, guess what? Trey Lance is a forgotten figure.
That's right. So let's go where you started. Lance gets drafted. Lance shows flashes of potential. And San Francisco thinks, okay, we got some. But he gets hurt, and then Garoppolo gets into the mix. Garoppolo plays okay, then he gets hurt.
Yes, sir.
Now this other guy, Purdy, comes in. Yep. All of a sudden, Purdy's like the natural.
Yep.
He's the answer to the plan. And the next thing you know, they're like, well, it's his job now to lose. So that's cool. But you got a number one pick that all of a sudden ain't worth anything to you because he can't play.
Right.
Now, if Lance is healthy, he's trade bait. But that's only if somebody wants to trade with him. And that, in essence, is the lot of the black quarterback. We got five black quarterbacks in this draft. Basically.
Now, Michael, you watch what happens in Green Bay this year. Watch.
All right.
I'm telling you right now, Gary Gray, right now, write it down. April 26.
Okay.
2023. That
yep.
Boy, Mr. Love, will be out of a job by the end of the year. You watch. What?
So you saying, are you saying that they're going to outright release him?
He ain't going to be done by the end of the year.
I guarantee that.
What they said was the Green Bay Packers should have done and didn't do it. And Jaywalk Green Bay is knew that you wanted Aaron Rodgers out. You knew that right from the beginning. Why didn't you start Love in the fourth or fifth game of the season? They didn't do that, did they? Now, in the new season, and this guy ain't played SmackDown 1, it's just way too. What are you doing?
Well, let's consider this. You know, if he signed a rookie contract, and he obviously did, it was for X number of years. There may have been clauses in the contract where he has to show up for X percent of the team snaps. If he wasn't healthy to do that, he can't get paid. Somebody else beats him out the job, he can't get paid. Still has to eat his contract, but by NFL standards, and remember, everybody's making money. What little money he gets is all he gets. And
what you're doing is you're putting love in an open position. If I am love, I'm saying, why did I play last year? You knew you wanted Aaron Rodgers. So why did you let me play the last 5-6 games of the season? I don't understand that.
Well, you can't do nothing about that, but you got to remember, the Green Bay Packers are publicly owned. This is not the ownership of one or two or a handful of folks. The Green Bay Packers are owned by the public.
Okay.
And they make their money on the fact that the group think of what they're going to call a board of directors or whoever make decisions. And Jordan Love, just like they made the decision to take him, they can make the decision to release it.
I think he's already gone.
He may well be. He may well be, but that's the essence of what this draft is going to be about. You got at least 4 or 5 black quarterbacks, Bryce Young, Richardson, C.J. Stroud, Hooker. I forget who the other guy is, but the bottom line is, they're all in, and they all have a shot. Now, we know bonus money is always the issue, because if they select you in the first round, especially if they select you first overall, you got to get paid. And there's no reason to say that it's going to be any different. The problem is, the executives in the league, some are very, very good at what they do, and some are fucking awful. And they don't care. I think in terms of what we're going to see is we'll see them picked in the first round. We'll see the names get called. We'll see them get paid. But who will get the time? Carolina is supposed to get the first pick. They're supposed to have taken Young. But think about it. When's the last time you heard the phrase Carolina and franchise quarterback in the same sentence? I don't think they've ever had one.
Where did Cam Newton get drafted?
Say what?
Cam Newton. When did he get drafted?
That's 2011. Yeah, okay, Cam. You know, Cam is the only guy that I can say, all right, he was a franchise quarterback. He played like a franchise quarterback. And fortunately for him, he got paid like a franchise quarterback. But that's
sure
it. But that's it. Now you've got this kid, Richardson, from Florida, who's a big kid, 6'3", 6'4", and they want to say he's another camp. They like to compare like that. But they also say he hasn't had much experience. What are they going to do? Are they going to match up and say, the hell with it, and take the shot? Is he that talented? They really don't tell you because we don't know if they're telling the truth. They're all so busy lying to each other that we can't say for sure. The only truth we know is if Gary Gray is a lineman, offensive or defensive, and he can play, he's going to get his name called.
And the game, like the New York Football Giants. The New York Football Giants should be ashamed of themselves. They pay Mr. Jones a gazillion dollars.
Right.
And then let the running back Barkley go in limbo with the franchise. Get out of here!
Yeah, true. But the point was...
If I am an 18-year-old back quarterback, I see that, I'm like, okay, you want to play this way, okay?
But that's more...
You're getting all these bad messages.
Yeah, but that's more the fact that the Giants are very conservative. And we already know that. Well, there's a lot of conservatives in the league, but some are more conservative than others. And the Giants are very conservative. Now, if we go by what you say there, then let's consider the Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones is supposed to be this progressive owner, blah, blah, blah. However, he's mad. And we know why he's mad. Jerry Jones is mad because he says he needs a quarterback. However, he has a quarterback. That's Dak Prescott. Prescott is a good quarterback. As a matter of fact, he's more than good. He's pretty good.
Jerry Jones and the people around that red guy, he would go to Super Bowl 4 or 5 times, but he refuses to put people around. That's why he loses.
Well, that's why he's got blinders on. He's got blinders on, Gene, because Dak Prescott is the wrong color. Now, it's kind of hard to say something like that in a league where 70% of the players are black. But that's true. Prescott has been a good soldier. All he's done is win games. He's won regular season games. He's won playoff games. They've done a good job in putting talent around him. However, something happened in that locker room that translates onto the field, and the translation gets lost. Dallas doesn't make it. Whether they lose regular season or whether they lose playoffs, the bottom line is they're losing. And
if you had an owner, that tells the club, this is your leader. This is your being general, right?
Yeah.
And what happens time and time again, Jerry Jones refuses to do that. Jerry Jones will not give that Prescott a locker room. They hear everything the owner says.
Right.
So when Jerry Jones speaks, people listen. And that Dallas Cowboys will never win the Super Bowl again. I'll repeat that again. The Dallas Cowboys will never win the Super Bowl again because Jerry Jones undermined the team.
Well, again, this is a matter of pride ownership for Jerry. He is an old-school vanity owner. Let's say Jerry Jones made it in real estate. He could have bought 40, 50 buildings and made a shitload of money. But in addition to all that, he has Cowboys. What do you think he talks about at the country club when it's cocktail hour? His Cowboys. He ain't talking about his real estate. And he has pride in owning the Cowboys. Not only are they profitable, they're America's team. They bought the propaganda, and they're supposed to be good guys in the league. Just like your Raiders are the bad guys in the league, Dallas represents Luke Skywalker and all the other good shit that comes in. That comes in the football universe. And they don't want that. Unfortunately, Jerry missed the boat when he came to pick up certain players. Remember, it wasn't like he was sold on Prescott. Prescott was a fourth-round selection out of Mississippi State. And somehow, he managed to work his way to a 13-3 record. That's not bad. But because it was a 13-3 record, Jerry couldn't justify trying to get rid of him. Jerry Jones had a black quarterback before in Quincy Carter. But
he
got rid of him. Now, it was never said, well, Quincy has a drug problem, blah, blah, blah. But Jerry Jones hinted at it. I mean, heavily hinted at it. And all of a sudden, Quincy Carter was gone. Now, this is a little different because Prescott does everything right. Fuck, he's even in a commercial for sleeping on a mattress. But they can't do nothing, Gene. They're like, they're stuck. And they know they're stuck. Now, I don't know if he believes that Dallas can't get no better, but we do know that he can't go and cry with Dak because Dak's black, and he can't relate to Dallas, too. He can't relate to Dak.
Dak has done no wrong. So he can't blow by him. Dak is played by the rules.
Exactly.
So he can't get rid of him.
Exactly. He can't get rid of him. So he's pissed. So I'm wondering, do they make a trade somehow for Prescott?
Interesting because with the Lamar Jackson out there like this,
yep.
With Aaron Rodgers going to the New York Jets,
mm-hmm.
And with Lance and there was this, you know, all these moving parts all over the place. Now,
right.
I can see San Francisco, Baltimore, and Dallas doing some hoochie-goochie next 2 days.
Okay.
I can't tell you what, but between Lance, Prescott, Jackson, there's gonna be some pieces to move tomorrow.
Well, I get the feeling that pieces might be moved tonight. But tomorrow I can see. But the bottom line is, who you trust? Do you really think J. Jerry Jones is tired of drinking that 100-year scotch or whatever the fuck it is. Well, I got to do something. I can't wait any longer. You know, he's annoyed the fact that he missed the white boy that he really wanted when Trevor Lawrence showed up. And when Lawrence won that playoff game with Jacksonville, all of a sudden his white boy crit went way up. And
yep.
Jerry Jones is pissed because he missed out.
Yep.
There's only one white quarterback. That's a kid out of Kentucky. Think Jerry makes a trade for him or makes a move for him? It's worth asking.
Well, it depends on how many draft picks he gets. Remember the Herschel Walker trade?
Yeah, I remember the Herschel Walker trade.
Yeah.
5-for-1. That was out and out robbery.
Yep.
But
that's what Jerry Jones was looking for.
What we know about Herschel.
That was even the dumb buddy started to say it again.
That's not happening again. We have the professor with us, and professor, I gotta ask. You know, every year they talk about who the hot prospects are. You know, Carolina, ironically, will have the first pick, and they're leaning towards this kid Young. Do they pick him first of all? And good evening. And secondly, other than Cam Newton, has Carolina ever had a franchise quarterback?
There's still questions as to whether or not Cam Newton's actually a franchise quarterback.
All right.
And the reason I say that is I'll go back to my favorite team, the Steelers.
Okay.
Terry Bradshaw was made to look good by having
receivers. By a phone call for the Raiders.
And you know, when I always looked at it this way: when you think about the Steelers at their zenith, the thing you looked at was you had two Hall of Fame receivers, backed up by an undersized tight end who was also
right.
a real good receiver. Then you had two backup receivers who were quite good at the same time. So when one of the first ones went out, he had a superior running game. An offensive line that could block. And see, one of the things I heard of the guy that's the OC at Jacksonville, I can't remember if he's a Jacksonville. Anyway, one of the things he said when he was in college, he came from a small school, but he was a good quarterback, made great
right.
by a good receiver, a great receiver core, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, because I'm not big on, you know, your first five, your top five, your top ten, all that kind of stuff, because you can have all the great quarterbacks you want. If you don't have somebody who can catch the ball, you don't have somebody who can block, it's a team game. So when I look at what Carolina's talking about doing, the first thing I think about is all them sorry guys they got there already. They got rid of two guys along with the previous coach, who somehow ended up with another job at a collegiate level. But you know, one of the guys that he bought in was one of his superior receivers. At the collegiate level that he brought in with him turned out to be more of a problem than he was an asset. So we don't know how good or bad he really was, because his mouth, he was shooting off his mouth and showing his ass more than he was worth. And that goes, you know, and I still go back and look at the team. Remember back in the day, you had the guys, what were they called, that played with the Redskins at the time. I mean, they had these little bitty guys playing wide receiver, but they could outrun or outcut anybody as far as defensive backs. So, matter of fact, go back to the touchdown that Joe Namath threw in the Super Bowl. You know, those guys played not only for themselves, they played for Doug Williams. Because, you know, we all remember when someone get up, you know, doggone it, get up. Hey, I don't, you know, you can, your leg can hurt tomorrow or whatever. And not only did he get up, he threw four touchdown passes in a quarter. And part of it was, you know, and think about that. He's already hurt, but his guys are getting open and making catches. That's what counts.
Exactly.
And when you don't have that, three, four, five star receivers going into college, and three, four, five star receivers coming out of college. If they don't catch, they don't block, and do the other thing that's necessary to help the team, your quarterback going to be mediocre. I don't care how good he's supposed to be.
You're right about that. No. Let me bring that up. A great point. We got Patrick Law with us. Patrick, in here.
You're live and living color. What's up, fellas?
Yes, sir.
What up, yo?
Now, Patrick Fred brings up a great point. The receivers laid out for Bradshaw, and they were catching balls for him. Now, we've seen that in recent history. We used to see Russell Wilson's receivers play in similar manner for him. But it is a big difference between making the effort and making a catch and not giving the hell and going on to the next play. So, what gives a quarterback power in the huddle to say X, Z hook, slant, whatever you want to call it, and the receiver says, okay, I got you. What kind of cooperation can you expect from the receiver in the huddle?
It's called leadership. If there's leadership, defined leadership, but the quarterback demonstrates, particularly in clutch situations, he, along with a coach who has an open mind, let me repeat that, a coach who has an open mind, these things can happen. If you got control freaks, you know, like Belichick or something like that, it's going to be tough. You know, or have a quarterback. Or some of these coaches are so tied to their systems that they want to play close to the vest and win by 3 points. That might be an issue. But the guys who use this label I hate to use, franchise quarterbacks, for the most part, have that kind of fluidity to do something like that. But it's leadership, man. You know, it boils down to leadership that guys have proved to his teammates that they didn't come through. So, and Fred's analysis of Washington, you know, they played for Doug. Them guys played for him and they backed him up, as opposed to other quarterbacks today, like Zach Wilson. I don't think they played for him.
Nope.
He could do nothing.
Not comparing him to.
Not comparing him to Doug Williams in any sense, but I mean the premise is the same.
And they knew after year one what Zach Wilson was about. And still, see, that's the guy that made me mad.
Gary, the problem there is a classic problem in football, basketball, and any other sport. You got these knucklehead control freak coaches who say, I'm going to run my stuff. Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
During the time Cam Newton was in Charlotte, among his great problems was he always had head coaches and OCs that, well, they don't want him to run.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. You 6'4", 6'5", 250,
yep.
And you're supposed to stand there in the pocket and say, I'm going to wait till my receiver come open. Go back to Terry Bradshaw. When Terry Bradshaw exited to the right, what happened? The receiver to the opposite side went deep and to the middle. Same thing to the right. He went to the left, deep to the middle. And they always, one cleared, one caught. This is the kind of cooperation you got to have. Go back to any quarterback that you can remember over the years who, and we'll just go with Super Bowl or deep playoff quarterbacks. Even those who couldn't run knew that if I step to the left, step to the right, they're going to move to that direction. One's going to clear, one's going to catch. And you know, and occasionally you get some studs like Russell Wilson had this guy in the late in his career. I don't remember his name. Lockett, I think, was his name.
That was Lockett. Yeah.
How good was he? Remember the play where the guy intercepted the ball and he ran him down all the way from the opposite side of the field.
No, that was 14. That was a big brother. Metcalf.
This guy ran a pattern to the opposite side of the field. The ball was up, was to the deep left. The guy
he caught him.
The guy intercepted the ball on the right side. He was headed down full speed, and this guy came all the way across the field, plus the depth that he ran to play, and not only tackled him, he tackled him. You know, and see, that's the kind of, you know, that's that leadership thing that Russell Wilson has. And when you go back and you look, as dull and all square they said he was and this kind of thing, he had a connection to his players. You know, even the running back that got screwed on that play that they should have ran instead of trying to pass. Even there, this guy still carries a level of respect for him because he knows that this is what he had to do. People like Cam Newton, on one hand, are one in a million. Then there's some of them are dime a dozen. It's all about what the administration has the will to put around them. And see, a lot of them, they'll pay Gugov's money for a quarterback, and you know, and nickel and dime on the receivers and running back, in the line.
Fred, I'm adding that, Fred. You know, Fred, even though folks, you know, got to realize one thing I always respect about Tom Brady. I can get more money, but I'll take less money to make sure that my right tackle will be taken care of.
To make sure that the
two guys on the defense can get three it out so we can run our offense. But you know, everybody wants to make the most money, and that's the killer. That's the killer. That's what, to me, they've overpriced quarterbacks for a long time. But it's too late now.
As a former defensive lineman, quarterbacks have not only been overpaid, they've been overprotected, but that's another story.
We got Eric Satterwhite in the mix as well. And Eric, You know, for a long time, Jerry Jones has a butt up his ass when it comes to the Dallas Cowboys. He has the pride of ownership of owning it, but to him, it's asset like owning real estate and all this other stuff. Can he get out of the plantation mentality? And will he trade Prescott?
The answer to that was probably no, because he's too hands on, you know what I mean, in terms of you know, the fact that our decisions and the way he hires coaches is always subpar. You know, he's made some horrible coaching hires ever since, you know, Johnson and him couldn't clash. He's had Switzer, and that was a tragedy. And, you know, what was that? He had that one DB coach that was there. He had a lot of retreads. Even McCarthy's a retread. So despite, you know, his ability to draft well, Cowboys are staffed with a lot of all-pro players, you know, in all the positions. They've done really well with their draft choices. It's just the coaching can't get them through. The coordinatorship can't get them through. So until he brought Parcells in, but Parcells was past his prime, and he clashed with him as well. So, again, the hands on the fact, as well as some other bad machinations of decisions, will always impact the on-field product. But I want to circle back to, you know, the Terry Bradshaw concept. The reality is, and the truth is, Joe Gilliam jump-started that whole process. You know, Bradshaw even admits, you know, he was not better than Joe Gilliam. Right? Literally says, the way Gilliam ran the offense is was predated Bradshaw. They just really followed the concepts that Gilliam ran. You know what I mean? Because, you know, Joe had a good arm, he had good touch, but he was the son of a long time, you know, offensive coordinator at TSU, Joe Gilliam Sr., you know, so he had a really good offensive mind. Just like, you know, you can't predicate the so-called Raider jump off with Stabler LaMonica, because really Eldridge Dickey was the best quarterback there as well. So yeah, the heck with those two franchises. You know what I mean? In terms of that determination, Bradshaw, literally, I was not better than Joe Gilliam. You know, straight up, and he got beat. And Chuck Noll, we know, was a control freak. So you would have seen the praises of Chuck Noll, this, that, and the other, and you know, the steel curtain, this, that, and the other. So Chuck Noll made the decision to go with Joe Gilliam. You know, so he made the choice of the best quarterback there. Yes, sir.
And let me confirm that, man. Okay. There's a guy, what's my man's name? He's in Jersey City. He coaches with Lincoln High School. He was on that Pittsburgh team from 1 year with Joe Gilliam.
Right.
He just retired. But he'll tell you just what you said. And at that time, I was some guys, and I know around the team. Please, it was obvious. But, you know, your point's well taken, man. We know what the deal was. You know Joe Gilliam has been playing, you know.
It destroyed him like it destroyed Eldridge Dickey, right? You know, I mean, the brother's got a talent. And if you can't execute your talent, right, it doesn't work out. Little Richard talks about the segue just, you know, similarly, that there's a lot of brothers, you know, who came up in the music world. He said they just had too much testosterone in his way of language. He said he knew they were never going to get on. He said that he had a better opportunity of making it because he was more likely to go home with Billy than Billie Jean. You know what I'm saying? So they always promote that. Yeah, he says that. You know, they always promote that lesser image type thing. The reality is what we like to talk about here. So we still have these clique things, right? Not here for the most part, where if it's not part of our unit, our university, our little system, our little pocket of the world, it doesn't exist. Bullshit. It does exist. You know, Joe Gilliam was the best quarterback there. Eldridge Dickey was the best quarterback we would probably never seen get off. You know what I'm saying? Because he was someone that had the skill set, got utterly destroyed. So the whole Raider jump off and all the Raider lore stuff is still short of what they could have done. You know, and Joe Willie Gilly, as he was called, you know, from some of those notes at TSU, he jump started the whole Pittsburgh brigade, and the whole receiver corps was drafted to meet Joe Gilliam, not Bradshaw.
There you go. There you go. And you know something else, guys, that's ironic? And a while back, I talked to somebody about this. concerning the execution of black quarterbacks, particularly now one who are dual quarterbacks, and they said, you know, we have to stay in the pocket. I know guys in the Hall of Fame, two guys in the Hall of Fame who did just opposite, Fred Tarkenton and Roger Staubach. Nobody never talks about them. Come on, Roger the Dodger. Fred Tarkenton, he led the league in passing, but what had he do it? Run all over the damn place. So, you know, it's that structure that they want to put people in. And that's part of, well, it's coming out of it now because they got no choice.
Yeah, but see, he was throwing that ball to them brothers, you know, John Gilliam. Mm-hmm. What was the dude that Tatum almost took his head off in the 70s?
That's right. Cindy White.
Yeah, well, no, I'm talking about the brother, the wide receiver for the Vikings, where in the Super Bowl, Tatum, you know, took his helmet off. Sammy White?
Sammy White.
Jack had it out. Wasn't he an HBCU cat, Sammy White?
Yes, yeah, Gremlin.
Okay.
He played wing back at Gremlin.
Okay, yeah, so he had all those brothers he was, you know, throwing the ball to, right, Tarkenton during those years. Gilliam, who was and there was another cat he had out there, you know, 84, Gene Washington, right? He played, for the Vikings. Those were the brothers that was, you know, getting open for his ass and shit. He was not throwing that ball to Mick Tingle off and shit, whoever those guys were. You know what I'm saying? Jeff Zeman and shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jay Osborne.
We got four black quarterbacks in this draft. Now, in 99, we know that brothers got drafted, brothers got paid. But only one of them, Donovan McNabb, is worthy of getting into the Hall of Fame. Now,
big time.
I won't speak on how they've talked about what they can and can't do. What I will speak about is the fact that we're waiting for the white guy to move up the chart. And there's one that comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, the Kentucky guy, the Levis, right? The Kentucky
guy.
What did I tell you last 2 weeks?
Exactly.
Wait, Mike, they got him now rumored as number one.
Right.
I could be surprised. I told you. I got information it was going to happen. And I could see it happening because they said he fits the role of what Texas looks like. No, he fits the role of the image of what Texas looks like.
Let me ask a question on that point, right? Anthony Richardson, right? I mean, he's just like nucleated, you know, the so-called combine stuff, right? Like just thermonucleated, you know, what's considered to be, you know, normal or reasonable for a super athlete, right? Now, you look at him ball, you can obviously see he got some poor-ass coaching at Florida. When you see his physical intangibles, right, because he can still play under center. I mean, you know, a cat like that, I mean, what's my man's name? Jackson at Baltimore? I mean, so in other words, Jackson, Lamar, there, thank you. And so Lamar, you know, was, you know, phenomenal, you know, athlete in the pocket, man. This Richardson kid, you know, blows him out. How can you leave him on the books? And then real quickly to that, how about Bryce? Where does Bryce go? Because Bryce is nice.
Bryce is nice. I'm not hearing nothing about 5 to 190 pounds. I'm not hearing none of that. It's about which coach and which team is going to say, I want him to make this happen.
Yeah.
That's what
I'm talking about. That right. Who's got the number two pick?
Houston.
Houston.
Okay.
That's where I'm hearing that boy Levis might be. He might be number two on one. All this time. Because he's big, strong. He's big, strong, and blonde and blue-eyed.
Well,
I mean, Houston, man.
This is why I say that as Jerry Jones is sitting there stewing with his drink, he may pick up the phone and say, let's make a deal. It doesn't matter.
No, not this year.
Go ahead. Get back to the better hand and then we make the deal.
Mike, in the past, he was going to make deals in quarterback, but his son stopped him. You know he almost got Johnny Manziel.
That's right.
I think it's similar stuff, man.
Well, if you're on the Steelers schedule, I hope his son don't stop him.
Yeah, I hope he does too, Fred. But, you know, there's something interesting I picked up because we know every year they talk about who the hot receiver, the running back, the quarterback is, but they never talk about the line. But by the time the second day is gone, any lineman that's worth a damn is also gone.
I remember
the Steelers picked up a kid named Carlton Hathaway. Now, he was a wrestler. Or I should say a wrestler. Now, in terms of a successful lineman, Fred, if you're scouting, what do you want to see?
You mean offensive lineman?
Yeah, offensive or defensive, actually.
Footwork first.
Defense skills.
How they handle their hands. Because mm-hmm. now they're actually allowed to use their hands in today's football environment. Back in the day, Doug Wilkerson, my late homeboy, along with several others, mostly from HBCUs too, they not only had great upper body strength and all that kind of stuff, which is, but they had almost ballet like footwork. And
true.
If you can't do what we used to call deep stride, you gotta be able to move your feet almost like a dancer.
And
most people don't know this about Rayfield Wright. Rayfield Wright was actually a backup center on the basketball team, and he also ran track.
Mm-hmm.
So, because he was put, I wasn't that good in the 1 and 200, but in the 400, he was on the relay team.
Right.
So, mm-hmm. you know, and see, because remember, he was one of the first tackles to pull to the opposite side in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Fred, Rayfield was, I had Rayfield in my studio mm-hmm. who said just what you said. Exactly. But also, Fred, there's another thing. There was a stigma on HBUC linemen, and that was this. The stigma was on technique, not physical ability of various kinds. I could see in major college ball, and white schools that I've seen it, like in the Big Ten, they got guys who used their hands based upon technique that was used for systems, where HBCU quarterbacks use it on strength and movement. There was a difference, but now they measure them well. But that could be a
Patrick,
problem if you're not used to that.
Patrick,
you're going to
exactly
catch it.
Right. That's exactly right. What I found out from doing our book Four Quarters or So is that the technique was the key. And that SAMU was generating lineman after lineman after lineman.
Big Nate Newton. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the things that they had against AMU linemen was in some cases they were not big enough, quote unquote. But see, mm-hmm. What was the term that Coach Chick used to use? Mobile, hostile, agile.
That's right.
AMH.
Think of it this way. One of the last guys out of FAMU that played for the Steelers. This guy was 6'1", 6'2", about 300+ pounds, and he played on the kickoff team. And in one case, The ball was kicked to him because he was supposedly in the wedge. He was the two men from the left in the wedge. The ball was kicked and it came to him. He grabs the ball and returned the ball to the opposing, I want to say 35 yard line. He moved the ball about, I'd say, 30 plus yards after he picked it up and ran with it. Okay, They made it. The announcers made a joke of it, but it was the best return of the whole day by both teams. As a matter of fact, because neither his team, the Steelers nor the other team did that well. And you got to take a lot of this stuff that they tell you about the negatives are really just so much manure when it comes to the reality. Because when everybody wants to talk about the greatest lineman of all time, do you all remember a guy whose last name was Mandarich? I think he was out of Michigan.
Can
you all remember anybody that was drafted as an offensive lineman from any school that was a bigger flop than he was?
Because he was juiced up.
They had him as a junior. They had him as a junior. And they were talking about how he was going to go first round, maybe first draft choice.
Yeah, the greatest lineman ever. The guy
literally couldn't bust a grade.
And he was so
juiced that he probably still kind of lose that fat.
The word was they call him Kool Aid. Inside you like a I mean the guy had good technique with that. But he got juicy, got crazy. And what made it worse when he got in the lead, he called out one person and that was the wrong person that called out. He called out my man from Buffalo.
Bruce Smith.
Why'd he do that? That was good.
Yeah.
Over.
Bo Jackson, Randy Moore.
There you go.
You know,
the
boss.
I think
the other thing that I would go from an HBCU school and looking at the big, particularly Ohio State, was the conditioning factor that I had to get used to seeing guys. Because of the fact that in the fourth quarter, the conditioning was different. That's for sure. The conditioning was different because they ran so much that it wore teams out. Where HBCU schools would open it up more. But that was the big difference in that. So other than that, guys, you could pick them, put them, plug guys all day long.
Maniacal, conditioning coaches, right? What's the brother that took over at the he left. He's from Western Kentucky as well, right? Not too long ago, right? Oregon hired a brother to coach. He lasted like a year, right? And then he hired a strength and conditioning coach, and he was just, athletes were almost checking out. They had to suspend them. And then it's also known that what's that cat's name, Meyer? When he was at Ohio State, man, players were reporting that when they were doing squats, Meyer was so maniacal, cats were blowing out their hamstrings, that trickles into, NBA conditioning as well, because what they have, I can speak to that pretty directly, back to that concept, is they have a formula to get you through 82 games, right? The measurements is to get you through 82 games in the playoffs.
And Eric, who did it in the NBA? Who did the best in the NBA? Who was known for that? Pat Riley.
He'll tear his own players down. He lost the Detroit series, right, when Magic blew a hamstring. Byron blew a hamstring, because it was over. Because Spoelstra follows the same thing. They call it the heat way. So if you show up to Miami and you're going to go
to training camp, first thing you got is to get knee pads. Oh, I don't wear knee pads. No. You know, right? So when you look at, like, the collegiate level, you know, I mentioned that in the Tennessee State days, I can speak to when Richard Dent was on there at the same time. You know, the Tiger Bells, the coaches did the coolest thing for the athletes. So it was the time. The ladies wear us out. You know what I mean? You have...
Now, he said something interesting. He said something interesting happened this week. Jalen Hurts signed a $255 million contract. Basically,
$51 million
for 5 years for getting Philly to the Super Bowl. Now, this is worth mentioning because this is how good money gets invested. In 94, Jeffrey Lurie buys the Eagles for $200 million. He spends the next 10 years trying to do it on the cheap. Any talent that he had that was worth a damn, he let them go. As soon as he had a chance, he let them go. All these guys were one-contract players. When Hurts came along, after... Carson Wentz wasn't shit, and lots of others, they decided that, all right, the proof of the pudding's in the eating. Certain things you couldn't change. Carson Wentz couldn't get out the bad habit of bad footwork. And Donovan McNabb was the only one who would be honest enough to say that. And because Philly didn't like Donovan, because he wasn't a Philly guy, whatever the fuck that is, they wouldn't listen to him, although he told the truth. So Hurts does the rest, as Tony would say, Hurts done it, and he got paid. Philadelphia put themselves in position to be in the mix for at least 2 or 3 years because they got arguably the best offensive line in the league. Most of the damage they did on defense, they got from their front four rushing. And on top of all that, they got a number one pick or a first round pick at number 10, where they might get a running back.
Philly, at least 5 or 6 starters on defense.
Yeah.
I mean, because of those light contracts, which they could blow Hurts out, but they've lost many of their better defensive players from the secondary, their defensive line, one of their best defensive tackles. I just know he wears number 97. I can't remember his name.
He
signed with the 49ers.
Yes, 49ers.
You know what I'm saying? One of their best linebackers, I think two of their best linebackers in free agency left, and some of their secondary personnel. So they're a little different.
Yeah.
And I do believe, I keep saying, everybody think I'm on crack. I do believe that just for the hell of it, Zeke going to go to Philadelphia rather than go to Cincinnati.
Who's that?
Zeke Elliott from the Cowboys.
Gotcha.
I believe he's going to go to Philadelphia rather than to, even though the Bengals need a running back because Mixon's gone, but I would not be surprised.
Yeah. We'll take it.
I would not be surprised.
You definitely won't take it. So those are examples of good money being invested and coming up with reward. The $255 million that he wrote was only a little more than what he paid for the team. And he got over like a fat bat. The Eagles are worth at least $4 billion, and they're going to be on the rise for the next couple of years. Because they made a smart move. And
one thing about the NFL, though, Mike, real quickly, that's not guaranteed loot.
No,
it's guaranteed for 127.
Okay, so 120. What's the guarantee?
About 150 something.
All right, that's the real money. That's the real money.
Yeah, that's system made a good. As a matter of fact, They have about potentially first rounders won her already. With the women's group.
Okay.
Because they made such a good deal.
I remember when they blew Donovan's contract out. I told people, he'll never see it. He'll never see that full value of that contract.
Yeah.
What's the guarantee? Especially in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's true.
I do believe, like I said last week, I believe that Lamar need to call him those young ladies and do his contract because he can't do it by himself anymore.
No, he can't.
It's beyond that now, man. It's beyond that.
And not just that. Yeah. They won't let him do it by himself.
He has to understand that he lacks objectivity.
I agree.
It's a little dense. A little dense.
Yeah.
He needs to go with Pennywise now instead of Dollar Foolish.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Just don't call Master P. He'll put you in a wedding dress.
Well, gentlemen, the draft. If
anything he would gain, he would lose. He would lose in percent in the agent fees.
No,
the draft is tomorrow, and we're going to keep an eye on things for at least 2 hours as the first round will be commencing. Now, the NFL has this thing down to a science. They got the locations right. Everybody's vying for it, just like they would bid for a Super Bowl, they bid for a draft. Everybody's making money, so nobody's complaining. Now, Kansas City, again, has invested $500 million already in Mahomes. And they've already made their money back. Now, that's crazy.
And so.
And that's because he's won multiple Super Bowls. As of right now, gentlemen, it's Patrick Mahomes II. The best of all time. Is he the GOAT?
Mike, can I throw something in on the draft tomorrow?
Yeah.
That I think is intriguing. The NFL has the networks network people in terms of how they structure when they pick out players in their profiles to avoid what I call, we all know, as the ghetto story. His dad is in jail. He comes
Trey
from Wayne
got that piece of shit. They'll never get off the carpet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They want to reduce that exponentially. We're talking about something else. And it's about goddamn time.
I mean, we went in on Trey Wingo, man. That dude would always do the second day of the draft, right, with the most rounds, like the third through the seventh, right? Everybody that comes up, his mom bought a 40.
She
realized she only wanted a quart. They overcharged her. The next thing you know, she went to jail. His cousins, brothers, uncles, nephews, sisters, godfather, you know, was an axe murderer. I mean, he was a piece of shit.
Yep.
They fired him. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they got rid of Wingo, man. He was horrible.
Well, they specifically sent the message out. We want to cut that stuff out. I'm going, they need to. Now, the next thing they need to cut out is the girlfriends trying to get none of them to shut up.
The
girlfriends doing what now?
His girlfriend leaned over his mother to get to him, and mom was like,
the moms are busting out on everything they're doing. ID model of fast. I mean, let alone his girlfriend. People be like, whose mom was that?
So like said, mom can go get on it,
you know what I'm saying?
And
I mean, mom is banging. What's her name? Forget the girlfriend. Who's mom?
That was funny.
I'm telling you, you're going to see him tomorrow, which I've said all along. I tell anybody, if your son's going to be drafted, don't have no dad going draft party. Don't have it.
Yep.
The worst thing you can do.
The 45 people in the small living room in Leeds, Alabama.
Yeah.
you know, sharing chicken wings and Hennessy. Don't
you have that?
Pastor Hennessy, give me some of them lemon peppers. Yeah, we've seen that before.
Yeah, and the other part of when it's over, yo man, I'm happy for you. I'm gonna holler at you tomorrow. I'm gonna speak to you. And the money,
I
told you that's the groundwork to go broke. Your mama, your baby's mama, and your family will have you go broke from the night you get drafted.
Okay, Buckeye Patrick, what's the deal with Stroud?
Here's what I said about Stroud. He can fall if he wants to go. I don't care. Go to the team that wants you and
ball.
You'll get what you want.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Because they're making every
top 10. Is he going to be a top 10 pick?
I think he'll be a top 10 pick. But even if he doesn't, look at Jalen Hurts. He went to the right team, built the right system around him, and he got paid. I am not into these guys who he should go to. No, go to the right team. Because if you go to the right team, you'll succeed. If you go to up high and get the wrong team, it's not going to happen for you. They're going to make every excuse not to succeed. Go to the right.
That's true.
So they're playing short man's ball with Bryce.
Yes.
You know, he's too short. He's,
wow.
He's, I mean, oh, what the hell were they watching? I mean, are you kidding me?
Well, you know, here's what kills me. How could a guy throw something like 70 touchdowns in 2 years and now he's too short?
Right. So this dude, Brock Purdy, that played with the
That's
Niners.
That's right.
Brock Purdy was balling, like it or not. He was balling. Shanahan
yes,
had him
is.
Tied up really nice, right? I
yes.
mean,
yep.
Purdy can't hold Bryce Young's jock.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Purdy was a very effective quarterback, you know. And
Trey Lance ain't going to start.
Yeah, Purdy
no,
got that.
Trey,
they're stuck now. They're stuck now because Purdy ain't going to be ready with the elbow surgery. So it's looking like
mm-hmm.
Trey. Purdy won't
mm-hmm.
be ready, you know, because his elbow. You know, he may – they're talking he may not even – you know, has to sit out the whole year. That puts Trey back in the mix, but – this cat from Florida, this Richardson dude, man, I'm intrigued.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah.
Fred, let me ask you this, Professor, now, and Mike, too, because I like Mike's like the quarterback whisperer over around these parts. It's like if you get a player, you know, when you coach, right, Patrick, everybody really, actually, everyone's all down on this one. So it's like, you know, we all know that we can coach a player up, right? But the one thing we can't coach up is the athletic skills. And when you
right.
see a person just busting out like
yeah.
this, you
yeah.
have to be just a whack-ass coach if you can't bring those skills online to match that physicality. Because I've seen skill sets with the dude. He was in a horrible
yeah.
system first-year coach. But when a guy's got that package of magnitude capabilities, man, it would have me foaming at the mouth. I could figure we could bring the skills up to speed with coaching. But we
Eric,
can't coach.
They got the whack ass coaches.
Daniel Jones. I mean, you look at this interesting kid, Daniel Jones. It's like, what? Come on.
It's called all too often. We have coaches
yeah.
who get locked into themselves. They don't
yep.
look. They don't look at skill sets and say, "This is what will work best for this quarterback." They look
right.
at this
right.
is what we run. This is how we play.
Patriots.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you were at Tennessee State, so you know that. Coach Temple was coaching women's track and field.
Mm.
What kind of competition was he going to be involved in? Sprints and jumps. So
correct.
What did he recruit?
Relays.
Sprinters.
And relays.
And
yeah.
jumpers.
Relay runners, sprinters.
Right.
And jumpers.
Mm.
Okay. Some of these coaches are so anorexic, anal. Let me get it right. So are so anal. They can't adjust to the skill. You know, even out on the field, if a quarterback cannot throw the short pass underneath. He just can't throw it. If he can't throw 50, you know, and they say about some quarterbacks, they threw 50-yard handoffs because the ball they threw was so good.
You know what? I mean, back to Richardson, right? Richardson is like Vic on steroids with a right hand.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, the Wall Street Journal has got this article, and, you know, I'm going to quote it because it's really an outstanding article. It's really worth reading, where they break down, where they, you know, again, you know, the wow factor with Richardson's, you know, off the chart stuff and the intangibles, you know. So with all this scientific stuff, all this scientific breakdown stuff, there's some relevance to that. You know, they're just like, they can't, you know, Richardson just is unmatched. And, you know, and I know, right, if you, you know, if we're out on the block, right, and we're picking five on five to play basketball, to stay on the court all day, or we're playing pickup football, and we see Richardson coming across the field, we holding all our picks till he gets over here. Patrick said, we holding all our picks, you know, and we're going to say, yo, bro, hey, man, yo, yo, yo. I mean, because one thing we
know
from a sport, from
just
watching great athleticism, like, okay, so Bob Hayes was no receiver. Landry knew he could put him out there in the field and throw him deep. You know, even they tried it with Skeets Nehemiah. You know, I mean, Walsh seen the same thing with Nehemiah. He had some moments, but his raw athleticism still got him on there. Willie Gaup, you know what I'm saying, was not a, you know, he couldn't run a route for shit, but he could run by you. You know what I mean? So if you got a cat like this guy, Duke, coming in with all, and he can throw the rock. I've seen him throw the fade. I've seen him throw the bomb. I've seen him throw rolling left, rolling right, throwing deep. And it just lets you know what, how horrible his coaching was at Florida. You know, because
one thing,
it should have been way better.
If there's one thing,
a guy like that, I can't see you leaving him on the board.
Eric, if there's one thing they need to get rid of, they need to throw away the stopwatch. Because when it comes to speed, if a lineman is running a shuttle, there's a reason why they want to see how fast they can go.
Correct.
When it comes to running downfield, there's no reason, because in over 30 years of playing and coaching, I've yet to see a stopwatch catch a motherfucking football.
You got that right. You got that right. But the one thing, where it's tangible that I've noticed about the NFL, you know, in terms of, you know, they got the speed factor, why they, you know, the teams that win who build around speed do pretty well. And that's, you know, NFL secondaries are fast as F. They close like nobody's business, man. You know, and I've been watching some of these secondary players come in. None of them are all pros, right? But damn, can they close. You know, and they'll only put people back there who can do that.
I think Patrick could agree.
Yes, Patrick.
Your point's well taken, Eric. All you need is go to an NFL practice. Of years I've been to NFL practice. And guys, rookies come in the league and think they open. No, you ain't.
Exactly.
The veteran DB is talking about him. You better get him off the field. Because he ain't catching no balls today.
You know, and when Reggie Bush was at USC, it looked like, yo, man, this is guys playing video game football here when he was at SC.
He was
so devastating, right? You know, they said the problem with him when he was at New Orleans, he always wanted to, you know, make the big play, right? He wouldn't take the 3-4 gainer, right? He always was trying to bust 20, 30 yarders. I watched Bush, you know, start, and I can't even remember the player, catch one in the open field. This would have never happened at SC. And this DB came out of nowhere and did a decleater. I said, these DBs impressed the heck out of me NFL level with their closing speed, their timing, and the way they can get to the rock, man. And that's where I believe, you know, when you measure speed in that category as well as the receiver game, it matters. Now, if you're a great route runner and all that stuff, I mean, we got some guys that can really run routes, because Jerry had a different level. Right. He had football speed. He didn't have a 40 speed, but you never seen him get caught from behind.
Yep.
You know,
Jerry didn't get caught until he applied for Social Security. You know, the bottom line.
Right.
You know, it don't mean that you can have speed, but if you don't have hands,
You're shit out of luck.
That's true, too.
I want a guy who's got neighborhood. I call it neighborhood hands. If you got
well,
neighborhood hands.
Right, the cheetah's a crack guy.
The cheetah's awesome. If the ball's in your neighborhood, it just
right.
That's one of those
Cliff
guys.
Cliff Branch, you know. Those dudes just outrun you.
Exactly.
Most of it's different about wide receiving DBs because kind of conditioning and sculpture how they have players. You'd be surprised how thin players and how thin defensive backs are compared to years ago because of the speed.
No question. Yep.
These dudes are playing backpedal football.
They're guys
running with a dude with a 4-2, 4-3, and that backpedaling, then turning upfield to get down to the rock. But for the most part, man, they're facing the rock, and then they're backpedaling at a different level, and then they're trying to cut off the angles. You can't fake that unless you got the right level of speed factor and instinctive reflexes.
It's
impossible.
There's no question.
And then there's a wisdom factor also, because once you get out there, you can recognize what you see. And no matter what the quarterback, you study the quarterback enough on film that you know that, okay, certain moves he makes are designed to create certain things in the backfield. So you learn how to defend against all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that speaks to Lester Hayes because he had 13 interceptions regular season, 3 in the playoffs,
yes,
and 4 taken back from penalties.
Mm-hmm. This is all good shit. We got to save some of this for tomorrow. So right now, I want to bring it down to final thoughts. Patrick, lead off, please.
There's this guy named Mark who his specialty in his money-making his career is helping college and high school athletes increase their speed. Mark Taylor has been known to have some tremendous clients. Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Clemson. But he ran into a problem about a week ago. And the problem was get these people off social media. Put the phone down. He got on the phone and talked about black folks like a dog. He was talking about black folks in Atlanta. I'm tired of seeing these niggas in Atlanta.
Yeah, I've seen that video.
Goes to his hotel room and tells that he's ordering some food, some chicken wings, and he wants a big.
He wanted a red bone. He wanted a red bone and a white
red bone.
He sent the red bone out the window.
That's it. But here's the killer. He's close friends with Saban. He's close friends with Mike's boy Dabo Sweeney. And even you know about all this is going on.
That's how
Come
they
on.
Talk.
People say that. Yes, 100%. I'm going. Wait a minute. They said, Saban can't be responsible for him. Yes, he can. You know who he is.
Yes, he can. That's right. Yeah, no. They need to take care of that counterfeit motherfucker right on
the
back.
Go ahead.
Go on, Fred. Go on, Fred.
He may not have been responsible before, but he should be responsible now. When your dog comes out of your house and bites somebody, okay, if it's in your house, that's one thing, but when he's out in the street biting people, hey, that's your dog. Your dog.
A guy like that, you know. I mean, are we surprised? Right? We're not surprised.
No, I'm not surprised.
We're not surprised.
What I'm really pissed about, there are two guys I know here in Jersey that for years are trying to get contracts and are very, very good. This dude and the black folks sending the kids to him, paying the money.
Yeah,
Come on, y'all.
That's the criminal. You're right. That's the criminal part about that they keep feeding, you know, these, you know, maniacal MFers, and that's why the respect level is so low and the return is so low long term. So you're right. But again, you know, he's outed now, so it's a wrap for him.
That's right. But they have one.
He's out.
Hopefully.
It's a wrap. It's a freaking wrap, man. What happens when you do shit like that, your own boys turn against you. That goes back real quick to, like, you know, the Emmett Till case. Once them crackers did that interview, it was over. Everybody, even their cracker friends turned their backs on when they did that interview.
Yeah.
They're like, you broke the code.
Yeah. Got paid. Sonny fell out, and they all had horrible endings
because they got outed by their own folks that they thought never was happening. They like, yeah, we got you through
yeah,
that shit. And then you turn around and got to talking. So the same thing with this dude. All of a sudden, his boys are like, ain't picking up the phone.
David ain't calling this motherfucker back. Why are they not talking to me?
He's done.
Professor, come on with it, Professor.
Well, my interest is in how many HBCU players get drafted and how many are going to be signed miraculously once the draft is over. All of a sudden, they're good enough to be not only be
Good rookie contract.
That's the list I'm interested in because
I agree.
As this year has gone on, I have been nice as I possibly could about this whole Deion thing. But
oh my goodness, who would call it like it is?
But you know, he
call it like it is, man.
He may have called attention to a lot of things about HBCUs, and it's things, you know, Eric, you and I and several others have known for years. We're as good as we are bad. We're as bad as we are good. But at the end of the day, we produce men and women of quality and character and all those other things. And if you want to, my poster child is not just Eddie Robinson, but I personally knew Big House Dean. You personally knew several coaches there at Tennessee State who not only produce quality men, but quality women. Because, you know, you know what the whole thing was like.
Everything was built on respect, and I will share that I knew Cleo Hill, you know, because he was an Essex County junior college for many years in Newark, right, Pat?
Right.
You know about that as well.
Yeah,
and his son, you know, and so what it was, what I found out about it, you know, was the whole camaraderie, man. And like I said, we don't need to get to a name drop fest, but everybody who was associated in that entire venue was affiliated. You know what I'm saying? So if you were at Grambling during that time frame, you know, I met Ernie Ladd. You know, I don't know if he was at Grambling at the time, or I don't know if he went there or not, but
he was at Grambling. But all these dudes
were like, you know, Sonny Hill, right? You know, I mean, it goes on and on.
Yes.
These are all network people that went to the HBCUs, right? But because this is the competition and these are the friendships. John Chaney, man, what a great brother that was.
Chaney.
I love talking to Coach,
and
so my dad had all these affiliations with all these people.
Yes.
And so, you know, I never seen it like, oh, he was, you know, Wake, you know, he was South Carolina State. He was, you know, North Carolina Central. It was just this whole camaraderie network thing. You know what I mean?
And we have not done a good enough job maybe of telling others about it, but at the same time, though, just look at, you know, life goes on, quality is being produced, the character's there. And so, you know, I wish Mr. Prime, I wish him well.
He had 20 players jump ship yesterday.
18.
You know. 18. Yeah, I mean, in other
I wish
words,
him well.
Hey, man, the Pac-12 is no joke, and they can't wait.
And see, at the end of the day, you know, he's going to have to produce because white folks don't give you $5 million Let me weigh in on that. I will get
another reference for you like that. Richardson article, Wall Street Journal, it kind of verifies what we're talking about for the people who need that. We kind of don't. But with the Sanders, there's a YouTube video where he goes to some kind of meeting. I don't know if it's meeting the public or press. And his offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator was meeting the public or the media of Colorado. And you would have thought they were facing a Senate tribunal the way they were bombarding those coordinators with questions.
And that's how it's going to be.
Yeah.
Because again, he was to me, he was never a savior to HBCUs, and I don't see him as a savior to Colorado. Because you know, over and above the fact that he's scared of that buffalo, which he should be, pretty crazy. But he's also, he don't necessarily fit in up there. There's only
Nah, his personality and his style is southeastern United States.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not Colorado. He's the third brother that's coached there. So ain't
no thing. Money.
They're promoting the personality shit. The players aren't buying in. They're not buying into that crap. You know what I'm saying? And so the thing is, wearing the cowboy hat won't cut it. Plus, you've never, ever, coached on cold terrain. You're in Colorado. It snows, bruh. It's frigid.
One of my teammates from college used to live up there, and we have a standing joke. Okay, if we come up there to see you, if you would plan something for us to get together there in your home, you got to have it between the 1st of May and the end of August, because we ain't coming up there.
The first of May
has to get put in the way of snow.
And not just that, just commuting from your crib to the stadium to a
mirror. You're 5,000 feet above sea level, gentlemen.
Try running
sixes and sevens on a field like that, trying to get your wind back with that kind of nonsense in that atmosphere. If you ain't in shape,
you're right. It's thin air. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
All that's new terrain, Shador.
Yeah, because, think about it. One of the guys, there's been two or three guys, actually, that on one play for the Steelers, he couldn't play when they played Denver because he had sickle cell.
Yeah, Ryan Clark.
There's several guys who had to sit out in the NFL who had to sit out when they went up to play Denver.
It happens a lot with the NBA as well when they go to Denver to play the Nuggets. The NBA players struggle, in that environment as well. Yeah, it's known for that. I remember Shaheen Holloway when they played Colorado in the NIT, and they had to travel to the University of Colorado to play that. And they were competitive, but, they felt they lost traction because of the altitude.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one who knows. Altitude can mess with you.
Great place to train. That's why they have great place to train. That's why the Olympic Committee on the training, Colorado Springs, right? So the Olympics is there, and the Air Force has their academy there. And then they also have certain military bases there, but it's all dealing with that Rocky Mountain altitude. There's some science behind that shit. Yeah. And you're coming from Flatland, Mississippi. Tropical, game 5, you're going up to Utah, or you're going to have that home game, and these Pac-12 squads want some of that.
Forget it. Forget it. Oh, man.
Yeah, thanks for bringing up that, Fred. Yeah, I watched the transfer portal on that. Then I watched his coaches get grilled, and they were like deers in the headlight. Everyone's not kissing our you-know-what like they did in Jackson State. They're bombarding us with legit questions. Formation.
That's right.
Preparation. Defensive alignment. What's your system? Are you bringing your system from this old school? How are you going to implement it here? What's your player stability? This is going to be an expansion team. These players don't know each other. There's no continuity. You're coming off a 1-10 season. They're just sitting there like deers in a headlight.
How are you going to get them in shape? That's the question that should have been everybody's
mind. Well, you can't keep a team together. First of all, you can't. Listen, we all coach to play. number one thing is continuity and personnel.
Mm-hmm.
You need, especially in the first year coming off a 1-2 season, and players are jumping ship because you challenged them to jump ship. And I really appreciate those JSU players that didn't leave in mass.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good on them. Eric, in addition to the draft and stuff, give me your overview of how the NFL is going to have to deal with the reality that there's no more white heroes. We got Aaron Rodgers in Long
Island. Make one.
We got Burrow in Cincinnati. And as Patrick say, they are going to make one. And I believe that. But what do you think is going to be the atmosphere for tomorrow's draft?
Yes, it's really incredible. It's really incredible times because there are situations that are happening that are so subtle and so consistent that, you know, there's a whole shift and change. And quite frankly, it's nothing they can do about it, right?
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about it these days.
Yeah.
The moment, black you know, yeah, I mean, just as a symbolism, like a symbolic thing to what I'm speaking to, because I was told to look for these kinds of signs like many years ago, and I've seen it all play out by some, you know, I had some really incredible elders for all kinds, you know, assisting me because, you know, I was raised to be amongst those who can, you know, cast wisdom and shit. And they were telling me, this is what you need to look for. When you see a New York, you know, district attorney who's a black man bring Trump into a trial, I mean, that's different.
Yeah.
That's different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A black man. I mean, the reality, if we get all of the politics shit, the reality is a black man. Because the so-called, you know, tough talking, whatever, say, hey, man, you're going to have a trial, bitch. And we're going to stand up to it. That's a shift.
Yep.
No one can imagine no shit like that. So ex-president who had all that getting jammed up by a brother. Because the brother's the one that called him on the carpet. If he was pushed, if it was political, it doesn't matter. The symbolism.
That's right. How dare this power call me on the carpet.
I mean, what I'm saying is, it's like we have these symbols. Like if you see a Jordan logo, you know what it is. So that symbol's powerful, right? If a team's playing on the court, we see the Jordan logo. Logo symbols are power. The United States flag, power. You know, like Brittany Griner, she couldn't have been more happy. The moment she seen the USA flag, shit, she was like, shit, bow down, take a knee. Hell with that shit. You know what I mean? Because I need to see that stars and stripes, the symbol. You know. That's what you're saying. I'm saying that to say that the NFL has no choice. It's been a shift. The only thing they can control over now that they hold on the most to is the coaching positions. The on-field thing has changed permanently. It has
forever. Forever. Amen. Hopefully.
See, Mike.
Gary,
it has changed.
Go on, Gary.
Having said that, Gary, will Dak Prescott get traded?
No, not this year.
Okay.
Mike, can I throw something in?
Yes, please.
We all know what happened last week in terms of the betting. Players got busted.
The Lions?
Yeah.
The Lions got busted. And the one that got busted was the kid who was at Alabama, from Ohio State, player Jameson. But he got busted real bad. Because not only is he suspended 6 games, but when he got busted, he's on a rookie contract. And because he got busted, guess what happens?
Yep.
He loses his bonus of his contract.
No bonus.
So he's on a year-by-year basis. So he got $45 million bonus money. That money is gone.
But you know what? Yep. More importantly than that, though, it just goes to show you that speaking to the sports thing, man, I mean, sports is just, you know, circling the toilet bowl, man, with the gambling concept. You know, it's just circling, you know, because these are just the people that decided to attack and gave the warnings to those who have been betting.
Thank you.
You know, because they're all doing it, man. They're all doing it.
They're going to
fight. I know that for a fact, at every level.
Yeah. They're going to find you.
And the NIL thing, right, when you start paying players, you know, money, you know, NIL shit, they got more money to gamble and shit. Or they could get influenced, too. Hey, yo, we're breaking you off a few milli. You know, all you need to do is just miss that next free throw.
But
you already signed with us. You ain't got to worry about this shit. Just miss a free throw or two. Don't think that's happening. I know for a fact it is.
And we said this years ago when this came up. And this is going to happen, right? And my thing is, if you're a coach, if you're a coach of any of these teams, the first thing you tell is you don't do A, B, or C, right? And this is the reason why you don't do it.
If you look at the Lions last year, they had some really interesting games.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Point spread margins, some real strange losses.
That's right.
Real
that's
strange
right.
losses.
And by the way, Eric, for California, your state's at it again, bro. California's at it again. Here's what California's doing, man.
Okay.
You know, California and the NIL are at it again.
Right.
California has, the NIL is in opposition because they want to establish revenue streaming with players.
Right.
And the NCAA is going to get ready to go to court to try to stop it. I believe it's going to happen because just like California led to legalizing gambling, I think there will be player revenue coming down the line.
The whole thing is like, you know, in Taintville, it's kind of like if you look at the finals, right? LSU, Iowa, women's.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Clark, Iowa star, she got $3 million NIL. And then Reese is trying to come up. She's getting $300K. They're not coming up for the draft. I'm getting $3 million.
In Des Moines,
Iowa. Any other year, she would have went to the draft, right, Clark? Right.
Yep.
But she's getting like $3 million. But now it's going to, I think she's up to even more than that. Based on her final four performance.
What's the other girl staying in school now? Because I was, just how long I've been out covering in the WNBA in terms of being there on the scene. But the money, the girls in college is making more than the money the first round pick for the WNBA. I'm going
the roster. Clark is almost getting more than an entire roster.
Yes.
You
know, WNBA got to step up.
Yeah, because when college basketball, WNBA will never be able to step up because they just can't get the fan base. College is way more lucrative. But yeah, Clark, man, like any other year, she'd have been the first round pick. Shit, she's getting she's up to $5 million or more and growing. Get your loot, but you're going to get isn't that a trip? You're going to get a pay cut when you leave college.
There you go.
Gentlemen, we got to go, but in honor of whoever's on the grill tonight, I leave this little message as the little oily motherfucker thought he'd get away with some shit. He got snagged, and we just want to remind everybody, you know, no, I don't want to work.
Yeah, this is suspense over here. Somebody got pinched.
Yep.
Mike, I'm gonna end this. I want peace and blessings to the memory of Farabella Fani. I'm hearing these reports on these white crazy talking about it's so mayonnaise, they don't go to the depth of what that man did. They don't call him Mr. B for nothing.
Yes.
That's right.
Video you're about to see is in no form of fashion degrading any women. We only repeating what Donald Trump said. We feel like this. Vote for Hillary Clinton.
And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. Pussy.
Oh, don't vote for Donald, he will grab you by the pussy. He will grab you by the pussy. You stop it.
Grab you by the pussy.
He will grab you by the pussy.
Talking to you now, lady.
Grab you by the pussy.
Yeah, me.
Grab you by the pussy.
Don't vote for him. You
grab you by the pussy.
One more time. Yeah.
Grab you by the pussy.
We'll see you tomorrow, 99. Everybody go safe. And the Lions Club will commence. Ciao for now.
Peace out.